from 89.3 KPCC. This is Take Two. Emmy Martinez, thanks for being with us. We were just hearing NPR special coverage of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris in Delaware together for the first time as the 2020 Democratic presidential ticket. They both came out with their visions for what the United States can be under a Biden and Harris presidency. Meanwhile, they also came out swinging on President Trump, really laying the blame for the state of the coronavirus pandemic right at the president's feet. So we're going to get into all this coming up later in the week on Take Two, and you'll also hear more coverage on 89.3 KPCC throughout the day. Since we have a mini Take Two for you today, let's just get right into it. As Vice President Biden mentioned, things have been extremely tough for people living through this pandemic, especially those who are out of a job. Here in Los Angeles, many have gone months without work, and to make things worse, federal unemployment benefits ran out weeks ago. Now, President Trump has rolled out a plan to partially extend those benefits, but it's not clear if California will go along with his plan. And even if the state does takes Trump's offer up, many LA workers would be left out. And here to explain all of this is KPCC's economics reporter, David Wagner. David, thanks for coming on the show.
Good to be here.
All right. First, let's talk about the details of Trump's plan. This was outlined in an executive order he signed over the weekend. What's in it?
That's right. This executive order would partially replace the $600 in weekly federal unemployment benefits that expired last month. So this is the money that's really been helping keep people afloat. It's been helping them pay their rent, pay for their groceries, the basics they need to survive. And, you know, without that money, Californians would get just about $340 a week on average. So people have been really waiting to see what's going to replace that money. Congress has been logjammed over the issue. So Trump stepped in with this executive order. It offers $300 per week in federal benefits, and it asks states to chip in another $100 per week. So instead of that weekly $600 that people were getting, under this plan, people could get up to $400 per week on top of whatever they were already getting in state benefits.
All right. So going from $600 down to $400, but that's only if states agree to go along with Trump's plan. What has Governor Gavin Newsom said about this?
Well, he called Trump's plan absurd. And on Monday, he said California may not be able to afford this approach. Because remember, Trump is saying states are going to have to put up $100 of the additional benefits here. And Newsom estimated that would cost California $700 million per week if the state were to implement Trump's plan.
The state does not have an identified resource of $700 million per week that we haven't already obliged. There is no money sitting in the piggy bank.
Newsom said he'd hoped to see the extension of that $600 per week. That's what congressional Democrats were pushing for. He said, you know, look, $400 a week is better than nothing, but the federal government is going to have to front the full cost in order for California to participate.
Okay, so it sounds like this isn't really set in stone yet. Are we sure that California would need to put up that money in order to participate?
Well, that's exactly right. It is very uncertain how this would all work. The Department of Labor has reportedly put out guidance saying that states could count their existing unemployment payments toward that $100 contribution. So California might not have to pay what Newsom estimated there in order to participate. This guidance also would mean that the additional benefits would actually top out at $300 per week. And I think the big question in a state like California is, will that extra $300 per week be enough to get people by? You know, $600 did seem to be a huge help in allowing people to stay in their homes and make ends meet. But if half of that money goes away, a lot of people just won't be able to make that work in such a high-cost state.
Isn't that, though, why some state lawmakers said just a few weeks ago that California should step up to fill that gap?
Right. You know, it's interesting to hear the governor say that California can't afford Trump's plan, when recently there was a lot of talk in Sacramento about California paying a whole lot more to keep these unemployment benefits going. You know, lawmakers rolled out this proposal late last month to raise taxes on employers down the line to make sure that Californians didn't face a drastic reduction in unemployment benefits. But now those plans seem really uncertain, and the governor seems to think Trump's plan is also unworkable.
Okay, let's just say Trump's plan does go into effect. And even then, you've reported that a lot of Californians would be left out. Why is that?
That's right. You know, even if California were to enact this plan, many freelancers and low-income workers in the state would get nothing. And that's because the president's order requires unemployment recipients to receive at least $100 per week through existing state benefit programs. So anyone earning less than $100 per week would not qualify for these new federal benefits. And people in this situation told me they have no idea how they're going to survive on less than $100 per week.
Okay, how does someone end up getting unemployment benefits that low?
Well, here's one good example. I talked to Woodland Hills resident Judith Pomposo. She earns the vast majority of her income running a small business that makes promotional items, you know, things like t-shirts and business cards. But she's getting just $67 a week in state unemployment benefits. And that's because, like many self-employed people in LA, Pomposo also has a part-time job. She works on the side as a restaurant hostess. And that job pays her as a salaried employee. She gets a W-2 for that job. And under state rules, that is the only source of income that can be used to calculate her benefits. The system tossed out, you know, 90% of her past income. And that's why she ended up with these really low weekly payments.
I can't live off of $67 a week. I'm a single parent and I don't know how I'm going to survive.
Pomposo said she's been calling the state's unemployment office every day for months and she's not been able to reach a person there.
Oh, man. Is this something the state could fix?
Well, unfortunately, they say this is just how the unemployment laws are written. You know, if someone has any amount of W-2 income in their history, the state has to use that to calculate their benefits, and it can't look at any of their other income to determine how much they should be paid. You know, people caught in this loophole say they feel really betrayed. You know, they say they've been paying their taxes. They've been hustling to work multiple jobs. These are freelancers, people like Culver City makeup artist Veronica Sinclair. She told me that she's getting just $77 per week because a few of her makeup jobs in the past paid her as an employee rather than as an independent contractor. Sinclair said her savings could last her a few more months, but it doesn't look like her industry is going to come back anytime soon. And she doesn't know what other kind of work she'd be able to find.
I feel completely unsure about how I'm going to pay my bills. I feel really frustrated because I feel like there's people that are just being left in the dust, and I'm one of those people.
This is all happening at a time when weekly unemployment claims have been rising in California. So, you know, unfortunately, millions of Californians are stuck in this very uncertain situation.
That's KPCC reporter David Wagner giving us the latest on unemployment benefits at a crucial time for many Californians. David, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me.
All right, now to one of my favorite topics, and that's masks. In this era of COVID-19, we have heard from many medical professionals that wearing them can help stop the spread of the virus. But do certain face masks work better than others? Well, that's the driving question of a new study out of Duke University, where researchers tested 14 common face coverings to determine the efficacy of each. Here to talk about the study and its findings is Isaac Henrion, co-author of the study and the coordinator of Cover Durham, a community project to deliver face masks to vulnerable communities in Durham. Welcome, Isaac.
Thanks for having me.
All right. You're a data scientist by training and worked with Dr. Eric Westman, a professor of medicine at Duke, on the study. What prompted you to embark on this research, and what did you set to find out?
Well, at a very early stage, Dr. Westman and I were working on this project to get masks to vulnerable populations because we saw that although the evidence wasn't conclusive on masks, and this was in early April, on the balance of evidence, we really needed to do it. And then we needed to buy some masks that were really effective. And so we had come across some other work using lasers in other publications. And we asked the Duke physicists, okay, can you set up this apparatus for us and test some of the masks out that we want to distribute to people?
Because there's a lot of people making their own masks at home. And I think sometimes you wonder how effective those masks are. And I think that sometimes has gotten a little confusing for a lot of people.
That's right. And, you know, there's a lot of different materials that people use. People are confused about layers and what kind of style or fit. And, you know, with this study, which is very much a preliminary study with a small sample size, but what we provided was compelling visual evidence that the kinds of masks that people are making at home, that's two-layer cotton masks with a tightly woven fabric, they work really well at stopping 80% of the droplets that come out of your mouth, and that helps you to protect other people around you.
Okay, so what face masks did you choose to evaluate, and how were you able to actually determine how they work?
Right, so we evaluated a range of cotton masks with two layers or some with one layer, mm-hmm. as well as some other masks of different materials, a bandana, a kind of neck gaiter type thing, and a surgical mask. That's the kind that the blue one that you see everyone wearing. And then an N95, a fitted N95. That's what healthcare professionals use to keep themselves safe. And the way that we did it was, if you imagine being in on a cold, dark night and shining a flashlight, you can see your breath in the beam. So it's kind of similar. We set up a box and then shone laser light into the box. This is a dark box. And then you speak into it, and the laser illuminates the droplets that come out of your mouth as you're speaking, or not if you're wearing a mask.
So that's the key there, basically counting how many droplets were able to escape from each mask. So what'd you find out? Which of the 14 masks proved to be the most effective and which were not?
Well, let me preface this by saying that we're not trying to definitively rank these 14. This 14 was just a selection of the masks that we had available, and we're trying to demonstrate the technique rather than a definitive conclusion. That being said, the fitted N95, which is what healthcare professionals use, that stopped almost everything that was getting out. And followed by a surgical mask, that's what surgeons use and what you can see people wearing, that's disposable. But then the two-layer cotton masks that people have been making at home, and you can buy them in stores, and they're reusable, which is really important. They were stopping 80 up to 90% of the droplets. Wow. And we need to research this a little bit more, have a much bigger sample size, more speakers and so on. So it's very preliminary, but it does indicate and add to the growing pile of evidence that masks really work.
And let me tell you something, Isaac. My wife makes a bunch of these masks, and she uses quilter's cotton. So not all cotton is the same when it comes to the mask. Quilter's cotton really is one of the better ones you can use. Did you have any masks that actually had quilter's cotton with it?
Yes. Okay. And although we were not undertaking a systematic analysis of the different fabrics, that would be a different study. Mm-hmm. We did have some tightly woven cotton of the kind you're just describing. And as you say, the thread count matters because you know, the higher the thread count, the more stuff it's going to stop. And then another layer, that helps as well. So what we're looking for is two layers of tightly woven fabric. One thing that people might not think about too much that we did observe is the fabric can't be stretchy. So stretchy fabric, what happens is the weave of the fabric kind of stretches to make bigger pores. So although it looks like it's a pretty tight weave to begin with, once it's stretched over your face, it actually makes some pretty big holes, and that means stuff can get in and out. So you don't want something that's too stretchy.
Yeah, that would just defeat the whole purpose of wearing something. So which ones didn't work as well as the others?
So the two that didn't work, and again, this is a small sample size, so we need to be careful making conclusive statements, but just a simple folded bandana, kind of worn in a triangle over the face. We tried it that way because that's how you see people wearing it on the street often. And we found that although it did filter out, I think, 40 to 50% of droplets, it was nowhere near as good as a two-layer fitted cotton mask that fits closely to the face. And then the last thing was a neck gaiter-type mask that was made of a thin and stretchy spandex polyester material. And so if you have something that's made of a thin and stretchy material, you can see through the light coming through it, it's probably not going to work intuitively. And what we found was it doesn't.
One more thing, really quick. In California, depending on where you are, there is a resistance to wearing masks. In North Carolina, in Durham, what's the vibe there when it comes to wearing masks?
Well, we are fortunate in that our city and county was one of the earliest municipalities in the United States to mandate face coverings. We did that on April 22nd, I believe. Someone can fact check me on that. But we've been a little ahead of the curve, and that's partly to do with our project and advocating for the importance of masks. We can see there is not 100% compliance by any stretch, and we need to keep going because, as you said, there is some resistance to wearing it. People have a lot of myths and misconceptions about wearing a mask. And we just need to keep going, keep adding to that mountain of evidence that suggests this thing works. And it's a really simple way you can protect your community.
That's Isaac Henrion, co-author of the study and coordinator of Covered Durham. Isaac, thanks a lot. Take two tomorrow at 2. Make sure you're here.